Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And OKC tied up the NBA Finals at 1. We did the last two pods of last week on the finals, and so we're going to get back to that probably on tomorrow's pod or possibly Wednesday. But want to get to the first of our player season in reviews. And the guy who's been really on my mind lately has been Austin Reeves, D. And in this pod, I don't want to talk about him as a trade asset. I don't want to talk about his contract. I don't even really want to talk about his future fit with Luka or anything like that. I want to talk about the player that he's been, the player that he was this year, and hopefully the player that he's becoming. JJ Redick as well, who I wish they were in like year three or four of whatever role they were in. And Austin moved to the starting point guard position this year. At first, it was the same personnel. He was sharing the backcourt with D'Lo. So it was more in title and in on-court responsibility for sure, but it was making adjustments amongst the same couple of players. I thought Austin really crystallized into this role when D'Lo was traded for DFS. Completely different type of player. It was like, this is your job now. Austin had a superb regular season and a playoff series that wasn't that great. He made a great leap over the course of this year. I think that if first impressions are the most powerful, the most recent ones are second, and there can be a bit of a, that was the last thing you remember from Austin. And so anyway, want to talk about some Austin now that we've had some time from the playoff series and just from his season in general. Talk to me about where you're at with him.
So removing all of the other context that you said at the top, I actually don't see how anyone could be nothing but high on Austin as a player. It's when you start to get into contextual fits next to Luka and what the defense might look like and like his next contract that it starts to cloud the analysis about him more, just as I think that some of the look at his production on this contract amplifies his view.
Yeah, I want to talk about the player that he's been, right? Like that, like what he's, yeah.
When you remove that, I just think that he's gotten better every season. He's changed a little every season as well. I think it was 2 years ago when he was actually on JJ's pod, and he talked about how when he came into the league and the sort of routing his way to the Lakers, he was looking at teams that sort of had an avenue for him to play. And when he got to the Lakers, and that before training camp, the players only camp, he sort of knew this is what this team lacks. And so I'm going to play my ass off defensively, and I'm going to try to be like a connecting player. And ever since then, he's kept that part of his game to varying degrees on a night-to-night basis, but he still has that part of his game with him, but he's grown a bunch offensively, Pete. Last season, I thought as the year went along, he started to understand more and more and more like what his reads were, where his shots were going to come from, and even like how he could force the issue at times in certain ways in order to make things happen that were beneficial both for him as a player and for teammates, and just in terms of helping the team in ways that leads to wins. One of the things that stands out to me is when certain guys were out of the lineup after the D'Lo trade, and then when AD got hurt, and then the transition to when they traded for Luka, but Luka still was not playing. In that mix of games, there were a bunch of nights where, okay, Austin, you're our number two guy, and there actually isn't a number three. And so the ask on you goes up exponentially. And then there were nights even before that when LeBron was out, and then even after the Luka trade where the nights where LeBron was out, that Indy game stands out as just a high watermark for what the ask was against a team that's now in the NBA Finals. The asks for him in those games where AD didn't play, for example, like at New York, but he was just playing super well as a pure number two guy. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that JJ commented on in the aftermath of the Luka trade, and I can't remember when these comments came, but he had basically said, there's really no player on the team who's had his role adjusted as many times as Austin has this year. And it's true. When he started the year, he was adjusting to sort of getting a title bump with D'Lo still on the roster. And then D'Lo gets traded, and Austin has to navigate, okay, now there's actually not another guard to share these minutes with. So I have to deal with that. And then there was the, oh, AD got hurt. So now my minutes are getting staggered more with LeBron, and I have to actually play in non-LeBron units a lot more. And then there was that stretch where it was after Luka came on board, and then Austin's adjusting to what that looks like with Luka while still sort of carrying a load. And then it was another stretch where it's just like, no, actually, we're giving Luka the ball almost all of the time. And so LeBron and Austin, yeah, you have to sort of figure it out together on this other unit, the non-Luka groups. And through that all, I thought Austin adapted fairly well. And there were things that I think he still needs to improve upon, but 20.5 assist season, almost 5 rebounds a game. Whatever his end of season stats were, that's a fairly significant leap.
Oh, yeah.
And sure, his turnovers were up. His effective field goal percentage might have been a little bit down, but that happens to almost every player when you give them more usage and when they become a bigger part of the game plan. When you strip it down to just how good of a player is Austin Reeves, I think he's pretty damn good. And he continues to get better every single season. And I honestly think the expectation for him going into next year would be he's going to improve some more.
I think so too. And I think part of what I want to talk about is what that change in role, because it's so interesting hearing you lay that out from how much his role changed, even within we are going to give you the ball being the overriding idea in a lot of those different versions. Like that can look a lot of different ways. And it did for this Lakers team and for Austin. and that is the specific role that I wished he was in year three in.
So I wrote about Austin a little bit in the season review post that we did for Silver Screen and Roll. And one of the things that I think this is an important distinction, the prioritization of Austin was there all season. The right. circumstances in which that prioritization occurred exactly. was shifting and changed. And I thought he did a very good job of adapting to those shifting circumstances while still understanding that I'm being prioritized here. And so not at any time was it just like, hey, we're actually going to take things away mm-hmm. from you. Even after the Luka trade, I thought they were still like, you're super important. We need you. We're going to continue to give you the ball.
That's right. And so let's take a break here. When I come back, I want to talk about the idea of giving him the ball and what a remarkable journey it's been to get to this point.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
It is exceedingly rare for an undrafted player to become a we're going to give you the ball type of player. The guys who hit, who are deep second round picks or undrafted picks, they're almost always gritty defenders that will scratch and claw and do whatever they need to do to get a win. But on ball ability is so valued all around the world in basketball that somebody who's really good at it to an NBA level, them going undrafted is just super rare. But Austin's one of those guys. Van Vliet is the other guy in the NBA right now who fits that description, but everybody knew he could do that. He fell because of his height, right? So Austin being the height that he is and having on ball ability, just very rare in NBA history. And if you look at his career over the course of a few years, he went from that role player that was going to stick his chin in there and lead the team in charges and just do a whole bunch of different things fairly well, but not really get that many on-ball touches. But when he did, it was like once or twice a game, he would pull out a highlight fairly regularly. It was like, oh crap, look at this guy. I think what Austin is good at is that he's good at a bunch of things. This is sort of the concern and the like, I don't like this about the, are we really, really going to ask Austin to do this? Is that I think he's a championship level all-around player from the guard spot. I think the, like, we're going to give you the ball and rely on you to create high-level offense at every level of basketball, I think he could get there with a couple years worth of reps and really, really learning the game and making the right reads, like mastering the film room, mastering every scenario and things slowing down. But it seems like a very narrow path that goes against what I think he's naturally good at, which is being good at a bunch of different aspects of basketball. And I would like the conceptualization of the team going forward to be more built around his all-around game than the amount that we, but to, maybe this also plays into sort of a, we did such a, our offense was such a pick and roll heavy, we're going to give one guy the ball and attack off the dribble type of offense, that that's just sort of how it ended up working out for everybody. So maybe this isn't Austin specific, but you know what I'm saying with him is that like, it's him being an all around player that makes him special.
It is what makes him special, and it is the fact that he can hang in a variety of different scenarios and not only hang, but produce and be productive that makes him a valuable player. The point that you're talking about, though, that this skill is valued all over the world, and when you find a guy that can do it, you want him to do it. I think you're making your own case there for why the Lakers are doing it. The thing I will say, though, Pete, is I think OKC is showing this a fair amount. This season, actually. They have several guys who are comfortable with the ball, who don't always have to be on the ball. But when they do get those opportunities, they have an ability to make a play.
That's it.
And one of the things that I think the Lakers would be wise to do with Austin Reeves is to continue to put him in situations where he's not the only guy on the court who is the sole guy responsible for lifting up a lineup. And this is the thing that I think happened too often earlier in the season, where he was the guy that was just like, yeah, LeBron and AD are out, or it's only you and AD, and there's actually not another guard or shot creator on the court at all. So go and do it.
That's a big, big job.
And when we had critiques of Austin this season, a lot of those came early in the season when we were just like, why are you asking him to do this? He's not good enough at this right now. But I think that that throwing him into the deep end of the pool paid off in a lot of ways for him and to a degree the team. But I think that the team would be wise to learn from the fact that, well, he's got a ceiling at this specific thing. And if they go into season after season after season with Austin Reeves and they can't think that he can be as good as Luka Doncic at this or as good as even all-star level guys who this is what they get paid to do, there's a degree to which I think he needs to be viewed through a lens, Pete, of he is a guy who could do this at 75 or 80% of an all-star level guy. So we need other guys who could do it at 75 to 80% on the floor with him. So there's burden sharing with him.
Yes, but does that get you good enough, right? Like, does that just lead you to a second round exit if that's part of the plan? Again, this is very much tied to the how much is he going to be given the ball? And really, what's the value of a third ball handler in a trying to build a championship team? This is, again, getting away from the things I want to talk about of him, him as a player specifically. But I do worry about that, D, that it's like, yeah, that, and you need to get through the regular season. And he was very good in the regular season. But one thing I want to kick to you before you go, D, is one argument Mike always made with LeBron's our guy on the team now that fills that role that you were just talking about is, yes, there's a certain getting through the regular season. There's always been this talk about adding a ball handler next to LeBron over the last few years. And Mike's point was always like, yes, this is important, but come playoff time, that's LeBron James and he's going to have the ball in his hands. And we saw that in the playoffs to where I felt Austin was auditioning for a role all season that changed come playoff time. And he didn't get a ton of on-ball touches. And when he did, he was not good at it.
This is where his background and the diversity of his game matters. He's not a guy who came up as like, you can only be an on-ball player. I think giving him these reps is super important. I think the value of having a third ball handler is critical. I think that when you look at a team like OKC, they've got defenders all over the court. We saw the value of Andrew Nembhard, for example, and I would argue he's their third ball handler. Mm-hmm. I slot him very similar to where I slot Austin. Siakam He's actually the guy that handles a lot of late clock possessions, and mm-hmm. you give the ball to him and he can create a shot for himself in the half court. And Nembhard has been the guy who was later down the line in terms of that.
He's a great example of, if you look at the third ball handlers on other teams, almost all of them have defensive as the basis of why they're on the court in the first place. Like Nembhard pulling that incredible crossover or knocking down a couple of spot ups, that's the found money. This is Caruso as well, where he had a 20 plus point game in the finals last night, where the defense is going to be there every single night, and you can count on that in a way that, unless you're really, really like Jalen Brunson type of level offensive player, it's so hard to be that on the offensive end, where I just feel like if at the third ball handler level on the vast majority of teams, that's a defense first type of player.
I would argue that Caruso's such a step down from this. Caruso has found money. He averages single digit points a game. Nembhard's a guy that you're looking to score in between 12 and 16 points a night on most nights. Unless I'm wrong, I haven't looked at his stats, but he's just a guy that I envision as being a double-digit scorer.
He averaged 10 a game, 10 even.
And the Pacers run a more egalitarian offense, and so that sounds right after the fact. The degree to which Austin is going to be I think that this is where his fit into the team does come back into play. In the LeBron and AD version of the team, and now even the LeBron and Luka version of the team, Austin becomes not a third ball handler. He is more of a 2B to LeBron's 2A. Mm-hmm. And that requires a certain amount of on-ball juice. The question that I think is more pertinent is he good enough to be a pure number two if the next second star for the Lakers is more like a big player in the way that LeBron has all this versatility where it's like he can be this big guy who screens for you or a guy who plays in the post and all of the things that LeBron does as an off-ball worker. The point you're making about the third ball handler guy having enough defensive juice, I think that it's critical for Austin to maintain a baseline level of I'm going to compete on that end of the floor and not be bad. And I think that oscillated a fair amount this season to a degree that I wasn't necessarily as happy with.
I think a big part of that starts with the structure of the defense, right? Are we going to be a big switching team next year? Will they be able to drop or will show at the level of the screen? What does that look like defensively? Let's take a break here because I think what you hit on there is really at the heart of getting to Austin to be in that closing championship five.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
So, Dee, there's some inconsistency with Austin's jumper, but I don't think offensively is really the main place of concern for Austin. And there he has been a good defensive player within a good defensive system over a couple of playoff runs, where I think he's been at least okay on that end. But I will say, the last three playoff series the Lakers played in, there was a certain varsity versus JV element in which the other team's targeting of Austin's strength or lack thereof was a big part of that. And so talk to me about Austin the defender, but also how do the Lakers address that if he's going to be a pillar going forward?
Well, this is where Austin's individual ability to hold up in any matchup is going to be way more team dependent than what anything we talked about offensively is. And so this is where you have to take into account what can the team do defensively. And so the point that you were making about the JV versus varsity side or like targeting his strength. Oh, here he is having to box out Aaron Gordon or Nikola Jokic. Or here he is having to defend the post against Julius Randle. And you could go on and on with examples. Battling on the glass against Naz Reid or whatever. A lot of that comes into play because he's not the target in that, at least not all of the time. Hey, let's switch Austin Reeves on to this specific guy. It ended up being that the Lakers scheme was, hey, we have to double team Jokic, or we have to switch this ball screen, or we have to do X, Y, and Z. And on the back end of that, or somewhere in the chain, Austin ends up in a disadvantageous defensive matchup individually. And one of the things I think the Lakers need to plan for going forward is, are they going to be a switch-heavy team? And if they are, how do you account for that within the context of, we could talk about Austin within this, but you could also talk about Luka or any of the other defensive players who are going to potentially be targeted in those matchups. Like Rui, you could go on and on and on with guys that are currently on the team. Dalton would be another guy where it's just like, okay, we have to account for some of this stuff. One of the things that I thought was very true of Austin in a variety of situations where I thought that he was actually a good defender were knowing his job within the team structure of a team that was not a switch-heavy team. I'm going to funnel my guy this way. This is where I trap. This is where I get over the top of a screen. This is where I go under. And he does a lot of that stuff very well. It's the part where it's just like, hey, we're switching everything. Now go do this physical thing against this guy that's going to test your limits that I think is the push and pull with him as a defensive player. And I think the Lakers need to examine from a scheme perspective of how many bad defenders do we have, or not bad, but how many targetable defenders do we have on our roster? And if we have too many who we expect to play big, big minutes, do we want to expose them to targeting? And those are scheme questions. Those are team-wide questions that I think go beyond Austin, but he's a critical part in evaluating that for sure.
Absolutely. And so I think that the point that you made about him operating on the perimeter, him in a chaser role, I think is the best thing that he does defensively. He, I think, guards Steph decently well, and he makes those reads well. He'll peel off and switch well. Just not having a bang in the post against Julius Randle and Aaron Gordon, I think they need to build the team defensively sort of around that. So going forward, Dee, this upcoming year, he had this past season where he got a ton of on-ball reps, had a lot the year before, but really solidified into that point guard spot. To this point about putting a good enough defensive unit out there with him and Luka, I think that you can achieve that at the other spots to at least get a good deal better than the Lakers were last year. Like, if the Lakers have a good, a quality starting center who's good on defense, how good can the team be? I think it's a fair question to ask. But what is sort of the challenge ahead for Austin? For me, film work is a big part of this. The number of decisions that an on-ball player has to make is exponentially higher than the guys who are standing in the corners for most of the play. And his number of plays where he was right in the middle of that really went up this year. But also, Luka came into the mix, in which there's this whole new stew to be made. Where does Austin fit into that?
I think he fits right in, depending again on like some scheme questions that need to be answered. Some of the most reliable stuff the Lakers did last year were like horns actions and sets where they lifted their guards, entry, cut, screen away. Is that the way they're going to play moving forward? And I wonder if it is. I heard someone talking, it might have been Zach Lowe, but he was talking about how building a championship roster by playing a pure five-out scheme is very difficult.
Mm-hmm. This is the point I was going to bring up, is five-out versus four-out. Yep.
Yeah, the big man in this spot is so pivotal because he has to be able to stretch the floor to a certain degree while also having all of this defensive versatility and utility. A lot of teams just don't have that guy. The Pacers have gotten to the finals playing this way with Miles Turner. Boston has done it. They won a championship this way with Horford and Porzingis, or sort of anchoring this idea of we could play multiple shooting bigs while holding up defensively. But it's very hard to do that. And I would argue Austin and Luka have been at their best in their career playing more four-out basketball.
Absolutely.
In that case, I would say the strides Austin made this season were five-out strides. These single-gap drives and when to pull up and when to relocate after making a pass, where his passing angles are. I would say that he might make another leap next season and show more comfort as a ball handler if they play more four-out basketball. And I think that that's more in line with what Luka's done well, too. And so I kick that idea to you that I think some of what you're asking is still going to be dependent on scheme in the same way that we talked about defensive scheme.
Very much so. And remember, the whole concept of this year's team was built around AD the hub. Remember how much we were talking about that prior to the year and in the early parts of the year? What does that mean? How does that look like? And like you said, it's a lot of triple threat touches right in the middle of the floor. But if AD was the hub, what happens when he goes elsewhere? Obviously, you get an amazing offensive player back, but he's a very different type of player. That ability to play five-out basketball is so anchored to your five's ability to shoot. And for as amazing as AD is, his jump shooting was not anywhere near the top of what he does best. And it was something that defenses wanted him to do. And he didn't take many of them. And so that was very much more based on sort of that style of, we're going to isolate you in the middle of the floor and use your incredible ability as a driver, hit floaters, be able to create with your combination of size, skill, and athleticism that's so difficult to manage. Those were his best driving lanes, right? So if you're building your team around your best player, which I totally agree with, the different setups that you get into are critical to being able to really bring that out. But when your best player changes from Anthony Davis to Luka in terms of the guy you want to feature, and of course LeBron's going to morph into whatever offensive player he needs to be from a night-to-night basis, right? But again, last year's offense I thought was really built around AD. When that changes, you fundamentally have to change the setup in a way that I do have a level of sympathy for that, I think they can get into some more four-out type of spacing. D that is a much more fish-to-water style of basketball for pick-and-roll ball handler.
And I would argue four-out spacing that isn't based off like a horns alignment at the very beginning, where it's like you're dictating a certain amount of like, oh, we're going to rub cut here, we're going to flare screen here, we're going to like ball screen, like the ball screens come from these specific angles there. And I'm not saying the Lakers did this 100% of the time. In fact, they varied things up, but I think establishing what their base looks are going to be offensively, this is where the similarities between Luka and Austin, I think, can really benefit Austin as a, hey, I'm going to be a double gap driver here. I'm going to work off of these angles when the ball swings to me in this way and I'm a second side player in these alignments. My angles are much clearer. I just think he can be really good playing this style of basketball offensively. And the quote unquote on ball looks for him might look very similar to what they were in the season that the Lakers went to the Western Conference Finals when the team finally got to the playoffs. And he was clearly their third best player. Mm-hmm. And it clearly came from an environment where they were just like, yeah, guess what we're going to do? We're going to play almost pure four-out basketball. And okay, nail help comes here, driving kick, boom, open three for Rui or whatever. That style can be simplistic for defenses to sort of lock in on, and it's going to require a fair amount of ability from your on-ball guys to generate shots, particularly out of a pick and roll. But this is where the step up to Luka, I think, really helps raise the Lakers' floor in a real way that while we've been looking at Austin, this pod, to me, Luka provides sort of a blueprint for, okay, Austin's not going to play that exact way or to that level, but it sets him up for pathways that I think play into Austin's strengths as well that I think are super critical for his own personal success.
It's so funny. One thing the listeners won't hear, sorry for this, is me cussing myself out for this not being the pod that I wanted it to be at all about Austin. I really wanted it to be like, look, yes, there's all this context around Austin, but he's on his own journey as a player in getting better individually. But there is so much context around him that it's impossible to avoid it that I'm like, why can't we just fucking talk about the player that he's been? But he can be a bunch of different things. I think, though, that the on-ball creator job, it's like the only one of the only roles I think we could put him in. I don't think that we could get to like championship level. I think he could be good, but I don't know the way to address that.
I don't think anyone, even the Lakers, have the illusion that Austin will ever be your best on-ball player. Ever. And I think that he's come up playing next to stars his entire career, right? So it was LeBron and AD for all those seasons, and this year it was LeBron and Luka. We had a pod a little while ago about building around your best player's strengths, and we were talking about Luka and stacking strengths on strength in order to sort of optimize a Luka-built team. And one of the things that Luka has always needed is that second ball handler, the guy who can relieve him of duties, but who can also be an off-ball player who Luka can drive and kick to, who can be a second side player. And damn it, Pete, if that doesn't describe a lot of what Austin Reeves actually does well. Mm-hmm. And so I know that we were removing context to a certain degree, but Austin's skill set of being a guy who could both be an on-ball player and an off-ball worker are critical to his individual success and team success.
He's got to get better on his jumper to be the off-ball guy as well. That's the thing that fell off, and you'd pointed out two-thirds of his jumpers were that. He has a decent number of 2-for-9 nights, 1-for-9 type of nights. And his jumper comes and goes. And look, for a guy that has as much on-ball ability as he has, if he were also a sniper, that's a really, really high-end player. So it is what it is. It's the player that he is. However, to be both that on-ball and off-ball guy, you got to be able to knock down more of the open ones.
He really does. As the spot-up open to wide-open jump shooter, he needs to be in that 38 to 42% range rather than the 36 to 38% range. And the leap that you're talking about from an individual player production standpoint is going to be dependent on when he gets those looks. Is he a knockdown guy? That's a big ask for any player. And one of the things I want to see from Austin individually as well is to cut out some of the on ball, oh, I'm sort of drifting to my left and taking a bad three player as well. Part of the growth that we want to see from him from an individual on ball player standpoint is that what's a good shot decision for Austin Reeves? And I think that's a lower bar than we're going to assign to Luka Doncic or some of these other guys like Kyrie Irving or Steph Curry or prime James Harden and on and on and on.
He can make a lot of different type of shots, right? But it's just a choices type of thing on whether it's should I shoot, pass, pick up, drive. That whole spectrum there is super important. And so, yeah, him improving on the choices that he makes, I think film work is going to be a big thing. Last thoughts?
Yeah, no, that's the exact point that I was going to hammer, and it's what you've brought up before, is that this is where I expect the growth to come, is when you see improvement from year to year to year, it's not just skill set, it is
yes,
understanding of applying the skill set. And that comes from learning, it comes from reps, yep. It comes from film, it comes from all of these sort of like understanding yourself and how your game works idea. And for a guy who's had his game shift and incrementally giving him more and more on his plate, that's obviously going to be the last part that comes.
Yes.
And so I'm hoping to see that growth next season.
All right. We wrap up this Austin pod, even though with me still unsatisfied with how it went. I thought on one hand, we were kind of generous to him. On another, we didn't get into his skill set as much as I wanted. So we will talk more Austin Reeves. This conversation to be continued. We will be back tomorrow. Talk more Lakers. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Vlade. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it. Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes.
And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.